was the 40th anniversary of the May 68 revolution. And so there were obviously many articles, many TV programs, many radio programs in France and elsewhere, I guess, where very often this revolution was depicted as they called it a cultural revolution, centered around a few more or less superficial slogans of the students. For example, the rights for boys to visit girls at the students' accommodations. So I guess this was a fair slogan. But one can doubt that the workers involved in a general strike for that purpose. The workers' mobilization is very often mentioned in passing and presented as a mere point of support for the students' movement. And the purpose of such a distortion is obvious. May 68 was the biggest general strike in history, and the working class was very close to take power. This is a quite recent event, as Andreas said, only 43 years. Many people, even comrades in our organization, they were fighting at this time, participating. And therefore, it's a recent trauma for the bourgeoisie in France and internationally. 68 was a nightmare for the ruling class internationally, not only in France, but Mexico, Italy, Pakistan, as you know, even in the United States, in Germany, etc. And we should add that it was also it's a trauma also for the trade union leaderships and reformist parties. The truth is that the French capitalists are haunted by the fear of another 68. And they are quite right to be haunted, because another May 68 is inevitable, not only in France, but internationally. Of course, it won't be a mere repetition of May 68. For example, the political situation on the left has changed since, I would say, in a positive way, because in general, the Stalinist parties have collapsed almost everywhere in Europe. And even in Greece and Portugal, the authority of the Communist Party is much lower than in the 60s. The Stalinists in France had huge authority in the 60s. And as you will see, this had a very negative role in the revolution, in 68. Also, the reformists, the Socialist Party, the Social Democrats' leadership has very low authority today. So in that sense, it won't be a mere repetition of these events. But as Andrea said, anyone who wants to understand the general features of the upcoming revolutions in the advanced capitalist countries must study in detail the May 68 revolution. Now, the most striking fact about May 68 is that it took almost everybody by surprise, on the right and on the left. The bourgeoisie thought that revolutions were things of the past. The French economy was still booming. It was growing at an average of 6% a year for many years. 6%. The economy.
6%.
And the capitalists thought that they had resolved the contradictions of their system, their own system. Since the Second World War, the living standards of the masses had improved. As I said, the economy was booming. So why a revolution? The things were not better on the left. Socialist leaders, communist leaders, trade union leaders, they were blinded by the day-to-day routine, parliamentary routine, the negotiations routine, endless discussions with the bosses for nothing, or very few, very little things. And they were in general out of touch from the masses, the deep masses. Something Trotsky already noticed when he was talking about the June 36 revolution in France. As for the organizations claiming to be Trotskyist or Marxist, things were even worse in a way. Most of them, and the Mind Alliance, for example, they had written off the working class as a revolutionary force. The workers were supposed to be bourgeoisified, say, or Americanized, which is not very nice for the American workers. And very often they sought salvation in the peasants and in the underdeveloped world. They looked at the peasants, the peasantry, or in terrorist and guerrilla movements. And it's a huge irony when you think about it. Because the French working class had never been as strong as in May 68. It had been enormously reinforced by the industrialization of the country after World War II. In the workplaces, the situation was one of a vicious dictatorship of the bosses. The trade unions had no offices inside the workplaces, no right to collect the subs, no right to organize in the workplaces. They had to do clandestine work in the factories, or else organize outside the factories. There couldn't be a leaflet in the factories. But just to give you an example of the atmosphere in many factories, there had been a lot of immigration in France after the war. Lots of them were working in metal factories or car factories. And the bosses organized the production so that on the line of production, you would have one different nationality next to the other, so that they could not speak to each other. And many workers in May 68, they said they had been talking to each other for the first time after years of silence. So that was the atmosphere in the factories. So you can understand there was an enormous accumulation of anger and bitterness beneath the apparent calm surface. So in the years before 68, May 68, there were many symptoms announcing the upcoming explosion. Symptoms. For example, in 1963, there was a long, many weeks strike of the miners. And mining at that time was a big industry in France, involving probably more than 200,000 people. And the strike was long, was bitter, and was victorious. Victorious. In 1968 and 67 and 8, sorry, there were big strikes in and big clashes with the police in a big Peugeot factory. Two workers were killed. You also had big strikes in the textile industry. One of them involving 14,000 workers for 23 days. There is an interesting figure also. In 1967, the year before the explosion, there was 4.2 million days of strike in France accumulated, which was a big increase from the previous years. One last figure. In the Renault factory Billancourt, the one with 30,000 workers, between March and May 68, there were 80 actions, workers' initiatives, which could be a one-hour strike, 80, or two-hour strike. But obviously, there was not a normal situation. So I could give many other examples illustrating the big ferment before in the years and months before May 68. In the working class, but of course you had also the big ferment in the youth and the students' youth. As we often explain, the students are a sensitive barometer for the tensions building up in society. It's been we've seen mobilizations of students in many in many revolutions, like the 1905 revolution in Russia, the Spanish Revolution, and other revolutions many times. It was clearly the case in France. The weeks before the general strike, there was a rising tide of students' mobilizations, students occupying this or that university, or this or that building, with clashes with the university authorities, clashes with the police, disciplinary sanctions, which only added more fuel to the mobilization. And I can't go into the details of all these events. Something new was happening every hour. The students were engaged in a real guerrilla, psychological guerrilla with the police and authorities. But the main thing, I would say, is that despite the more or less confused slogans and tactics of the ultra-left, which were at the head of this mobilization, all kinds of anarchists, this guy you know, Cohn-Bendit, Daniel Cohn-Bendit, which nobody knew what he was. He didn't pretend to be anything. Maoists, two or three different sects, Maoist sects, so-called Marxists. So there were, believe me, a lot of confusion, if you want, in the tactics and the slogans. But they succeeded in mobilizing a growing number of students by the day and by the hour, day by day. Because the situation was mature and for a big mobilization of the students. So as I said, every time the authorities tried to repress the movement, it gave a new impulse to it. The Communist Party leadership didn't understand that. It only saw Cohn-Bendit and the Maoists and it only looked at the ultra-left slogans. I said that they failed to understand the massive character of the movement. Or maybe they denied it in purpose. Because as our Greek comrades know very well, the Stalinist leaders hate a movement they can't control. And for sure, they could not control that movement. So the Stalinist leader, they portrayed this movement as petit bourgeois, adventurist, and therefore reactionary. Well, as for petit bourgeois, it was quite true, in a way. If you only look at the social composition of the students, since only 15% of the students were from working class families. But first, the communist leaders are not supposed to condemn a movement of the middle class youth just because of its social composition. They are supposed to try to win over the students to the ideas and the program of communism, which many students were ready to do. And in fact, if you look at the slogans of these students, they were everything but not reactionary. Against the Vietnam War, for a better education system, against the regime of General de Gaulle. De Gaulle was at the head of the state. And for the overthrow of capitalism, for socialism, etc. So when the students heard that the Stalinists were portraying them as reactionary, they were just turning them back and, how do you say that, hug their shoulder. The truth is that many students were trying to find a way to the working class, and they were yearning for a revolutionary change. So what happened is that on the 3rd of May, the police intervened in La Sorbonne. That is the one university in the center of Paris. Most of you must have heard of that. There was a meeting of students. They were protesting against the disciplinary measures, and the police invaded the courtyard, arrested 400 students, put them all in big buses, and occupied the courtyard. But this was something they didn't anticipate, is that to put 400 reluctant students in big buses is can be a long process. So all the students were the non-arrested students, and even some workers, or just people passing by, because La Sorbonne is really at the center of Paris. They reacted. They reacted by fighting the police. So a couple of thousand people, mainly students, but already at this stage a few workers, waged a 5 or 6 hours battle with the police. And the first barricades of May were erected. But at the end of this battle, the police was still occupying La Sorbonne, and a lot of students were still kept in prison. So, in response to that repression, the student and teachers' union called for a general strike, an indefinite general strike of students and teachers. And the following days, you had a succession of demonstrations and street fights with barricades. But the government refused to do a step back, refused to reopen La Sorbonne, and you had the first blitz in the ruling circle, where De Gaulle, the General De Gaulle, who the head of the state, the president, who always had Bonapartist tendencies. He wanted to crush the students. He didn't want any concessions. While Pompidou, the first minister, and other ministers, when they saw that every day, there were more students fighting, they were starting to say, maybe we should do something, maybe we should do a step back. So here you have an example of what we often explain, that there are splits in the ruling clique at the beginnings of the revolution. But the government insisted, and the students insisted, and this culminated in the famous nights of the barricades, on the 10th of May, where you had around La Sorbonne thousands of people, thousands of students and workers, erecting barricades, and dozens of barricades, and fighting all night long with the police. The number of workers involved in these fights was also increasing, especially young workers. And in this night, the repression of the regime was very violent. The police was chasing the students into the houses, was beating everybody, whoever it was. They were chasing the students in the hospitals, taking them back and beating them in the buses. They were using very dangerous, very vicious tear gases. But the students have been fighting for, and the workers have been fighting for hours. And the next, and so that the overall, in total, you had hundreds of injuries, including injuries among the police forces. So the next morning, the 11th of May, there was an overwhelming condemnation of this repression. A survey published in Le Monde, which is coming out in the, it's a night paper, it comes out at the night, in the afternoon. So they had time to organize a survey in the morning. And the survey said that 80% of the population was supporting the movement and condemning the repression. So the pressure from below was really building up to such a degree that the Communist Party leaders and trade unions, Stalinist trade union, had to change course. It was not possible for them to condemn the movement anymore. And so on the 11th, they decided to call, together with all trade unions, a 24-hour general strike for the 13th of May. The purpose of this 24-hour general strike was not to launch a serious struggle against the government. The purpose was to let off steam from the masses, because there was so much pressure built up. But the answer was a huge general strike, a massive 24-hour general strike, and especially huge demonstrations in every city, well above the expectations of the leaders. In Paris, you had 1 million people in the demonstration. This day, the 13th of May, marks the 10th anniversary of de Gaulle's arrival in power. And in the Parisian demonstrations, you had many placards, banners, which said, 10 years is enough, which showed at this stage, at this early stage, that the potential for the overthrow of a regime. One of our comrades was on this demonstration in Paris, and he told us how on the course of the demonstration, the workers of the different shops, big stores or small stores, were joining spontaneously the demonstration. So that showed the heating of the atmosphere. So the trade union leaders knew that faced with the 24-hour general strike, the government would have to step back and make concessions to the students. That is, to reopen La Sorbonne, the police had to leave the Sorbonne, and all the students arrested had to be released. And at this point, Pompidou said to de Gaulle, he said, look, we must do that now. And de Gaulle reluctantly agreed. But the calculation in the trade union leadership was that after these concessions, everything would go back to normal. After all, it was a 24-hour general strike, and they had no intentions to organize other general strikes. De Gaulle, to show that he was calm and that he thought that everything was under control, decided to go to a diplomatic meeting in Romania with Ceausescu. But things did not turn out that way. Because during this 24-hour general strike, the workers had a taste of their own power, their own numbers and determination. So the leaders wanted to mobilize and demobilize as you open and close a tap. But that time the pressure was so big that the tap didn't close. And the very next day of the 24-hour general strike, that is on the 14th, a factory of the aircraft industry decided to strike and occupy. The following days, they were joined by workers of different car factories, railway workers, miners, electricity workers, gas workers. From this point, from the 15th, the strike developed like a wildfire and inflamed the whole society in the space of 1 week. In the space of 1 week. Without any call from the trade union leaderships. In fact, they never called for general strike in 68. Although, as you'll see at the end, they called the workers to work again at the end. So the situation was developing on the lines of June 1936, but on a much bigger scale, because at this time, in 68, as I said at the beginning, The working class was much stronger than in 36 in numbers and concentration. So every sector of the working class was affected without exception. All the industries, including the engineers, well-paid engineers of the nuclear plants, all the public services, teachers, bank workers, all the category of white-collar workers, workers in department stores, etc. On the 18th of May, 6 million workers were on strike. On the 21st of May, 10 million were on strike, occupying the factories and workplaces. And the movement was not involving only the workers, but all the layers of society. Peasants, doctors, lawyers, engineers, artists, etc. The students occupied the universities. The high school students occupied the schools together with the teachers. The journalists occupied the building of the state broadcasting authority. The writers occupied the building of the Writers' Association. The artists occupied the Art Academy. And even the Festival of Cannes, Cinema Festival, where the social composition is usually not very proletarian, was cancelled. Because you had some reactionary bastards that wanted the festival to go on. But the majority of actors and filmmakers said no. In other words, what is very significant here is that the middle classes were very deeply affected by the revolutionary mood. And they were looking for the working class for leadership, which, as you know, is one of the conditions that Lenin put forward for revolution. And I think it's hard to find a revolution where this condition was most more obvious. You also had, for example, a movement among the religious students, where they were asking for that on Sunday. What do you say, la messe, the mass? They wanted to cancel the mass and have a discussion on politics and socialism and communism and capitalism. And this was involving thousands of young kids, religious kids. So around the 21st of May, the country was completely paralyzed. And so was the state and the government. The parliament was still there, functioning. But nobody cared about what he was saying. And actually, when you read stories on May 68, even bourgeois historians, they have nothing to say about the parliament. Because the parliament had nothing to say himself. So de Gaulle, who tried a trick on the 24th of May, he spoke on the radio, and he proposed a referendum. He said, well, we are going to propose a referendum. If you don't want me, vote no. If you want me to stay, vote yes. And then we will reform society. I hear you, I understand. But he had a small problem. For a referendum, you need to print the ballot, the voting paper. And the printers, the workers in the printing, they said, no, sorry, we're on strike. We won't make any exception for your referendum. So de Gaulle turned to the German and Belgium workers, but they refused to print the voting paper. But apart from this incident, which shows the power of the working class, the announcement of the referendum had absolutely no effect on the strike. Nobody cared about this referendum. So the real power was in the streets. And here, as we often explain, a general strike, an unallowed general strike, is very different by nature from a 24-hour general strike. Because it poses the question of power. The question is not that this or that wage increase. The question is, who rules? Who is the master in the house? And the consciousness of the workers evolves at very high speed. The workers can feel their own strength, and they also can see the weakness of the state. I mean, before that, De Gaulle had a lot of authority. He was a Bonapartist figure, in a way, which had authority on many workers, thanks to the leadership of the Communist Party, which collaborated with De Gaulle after the Second World War. They were even entered the government after the World War, communist, with De Gaulle. But that's another subject. But that is to say, De Gaulle had some authority. But here the workers saw an old man that appeared on the TV, a radio program. He promised a referendum, but nobody cares. And he could not even print the ballot for paper. So they saw the weakness of the state, the capitalist state. And they start to understand that they should be the masters of society. A situation of dual power develops. On one side, the capitalist state, which is still there, but is losing control, is impotent. And on the other side, you have the strike committees, factory committees, which are the embryo of the worker state. In the big city of Nantes, in the west of France, is where the organs of workers' power developed, or took a more developed form. You had one central strike committee that was elected by all the strike committees in different factories and workplaces. And this strike committee was occupying the city council. It organized the supplying of food with the peasants. It was controlling the prices in the shops that were allowed by the strike committee to open. In the shops that were allowed to open by the... And the price went down. They even at one point printed and circulated the currency. So for some commodities. But which means you could buy different commodities. They even celebrated weddings in the city council. Well, you can get married in a general strike, why not? But in other words, the bourgeois state in this region was nowhere to be seen. The strike committee was the embryo of the worker state. And was the only one to be active. So what was necessary in that situation was to develop the same kind of central strike committee, central strike committee, in every big and small cities of the country, and to link them together at regional and national level. These would have been the organ of the workers' state. And such a workers' state which would have swept away the old, decrepit, impotent capitalist states. Unfortunately, the case of Nantes was more an exception than the rule. Because you had thousands of strike committees in the country, but they were not linked together most of the time, not even at the regional level. And the Stalinist and socialist leaders, they did nothing to link them. Although they had the force and authority to do so, to call for such a road. The Communist Party had 300,000 members, a huge layers of sympathizers. It controlled the biggest trade union in the country, the CGT, with 2.5 million workers, which for France is a high figure. But the Stalinist leaders, they refused simply refused to recognize the revolutionary character of the situation. They denounced the idea of a revolutionary overthrow of the regime as petty bourgeois adventurism. And as in June 36, they said it was just a movement for better wages and better conditions. And so they were begging the government to open negotiations, as in June 36, so that at the end of these negotiations, they could show something to the workers and call them to go back to work. And so the government followed that path, opened the negotiations on the 26th of May. And as you know, when the capitalists fear of losing everything, they can make big concessions just like that. Concessions they know they will take back on with the other hand later. So in 36 hours of negotiations, the bosses gave and the government gave to the trade unions more than what the trade union leaders have been asking for years in vain. Big wage increases. I think an increase of the minimum wage of, was it 40%? A general increase of wages of 15%. Or even more, I don't remember the figure. The really big increases. The pensions were raised. And the trade union sections were legalized in the factories. They did some other promise. But I was representing a real, a big, big concessions in total. In 36 hours. So the CGT leaders, at the end of the negotiations, said, well, gentlemen, very good. It seems to be, it's very good that we've been working very well. Only we cannot call this a deal yet. We cannot call this a deal. We'll call it a protocol. Because we have to ask the workers what they think about it. Because the CGT, the Stalinist leaders, they knew and they feared that in such a revolutionary situation, the workers might not accept these concessions. And they had the experience of June 36 once again. When after the Matignon deal, the strike developed. Not only the workers didn't go back to work, but the strike exploded. So Georges Segui, who was number one of the CGT, he went to the big factories of Renault-Billancourt, with tens of thousands of workers here. And he explained the wage increases, the legalization of the trade union sections, pension increases. But he could not finish his speech because the workers, they were chanting popular government and other revolutionary slogans. So the protocol of Grenelle, we call it, was dead. Because when the Renault factories rejected it, it was very soon known everywhere. By the way, it was broadcasted on TV. And the reaction was the same everywhere. Because the workers had developed a sense of their own power. They realized they had the power within their grasp. And they didn't want to give it back. Take, for example, the legalization of trade union sections. It means that the workers could organize trade union in the factories. Well, before the general strike, this would have been a conquest. But during the Red General Strike, with occupation, the problem was more the legalization of the boss in the factory. This was not a step forward, but a step backward. Because it implies that the boss come back and that exploitation started again. They were the masters in the factories during the strike. They were, the workers were the masters in the factories. And they wanted to, instinctively, they wanted to be the masters for forever. So this, for example, explains why they rejected the deal. So as I said, the workers ask for popular government. That was the formula, the slogan, popular government. By which they meant the end of exploitation and workers' power. But this slogan was put in circulation by the leadership of the Communist Party in a very cynical way, because the Stalinist leaders, they were terrified to be outflanked by the socialists, who at this point tried to present themselves to the bourgeoisie as an alternative. And the Stalinist leaders, they had to give some political perspective to the movement. Nonetheless, it was in complete contradiction with the idea that this was a movement for wages and conditions of work. Well, you know, they put in the popular government on page 2 of L'Humanité. They put the slogan, and on page 3, they explain that it's only a movement for wage increases. But just to give an example of the pressure building up in the leadership of the Stalinists. At one point, Waldeck Rocher, which was the leader of the Communist Party, he wrote, "The Gaullist regime has outworn itself. It must go. To achieve the aspirations of the workers, of the teachers, of the students, it is necessary that the state ceases to be a tool of the monopoly capitalists. We consider that it is necessary to take a step towards socialism and propose not only the nationalization of the big banks, but of the great monopoly industrial enterprises. The Communist Party stands for democratic control and of national enterprise, democratic control of the national enterprise, and the establishment on all layers of economic life of workers' control, to begin by the extension of the role of the factory committees." This could almost be Ted Grant, more or less. I mean, it was correct, including when you think about it, the role of factory committees. But I was very cynical, because in the factories they were fighting against the idea of linking up the factory committees, and in general they did nothing to put in practice the program. They refused to take power. And the main argument was that the army would intervene and it would be a bloodshed, to which Ted Grant replied in two very good articles he wrote on July and August. Ted said, "Well, let us admit that the Communist Party takes power through elections, because they said they would prefer to take power through elections. Well, the bourgeoisie could still mobilize the army. It's not because you take power through elections that the bourgeoisie will let you do." So if we follow the logic of the Stalinists, the working class could never take power in any condition, because the bourgeoisie would mobilize the army. But of course, the bourgeoisie could have tried to mobilize the army. But as the newspaper, The Times, wrote in May, "Yes, De Gaulle could use the army once, because it would break into pieces." And The Times is a bourgeois paper. So we have, and we agree with that, we have very few informations about the atmosphere in the army. Very few. We know that there's been a mutiny on one ship. There is also a very famous leaflet of a large group of soldiers I mean hundreds of soldiers, not a, which called for the building up of a soldiers' committee. But we don't have many more details about what was the atmosphere in the army. But above all, we know that the army, the French army, was mainly composed of working class youth, all of which had a member of his family on strike. And in such a revolutionary situation, the army must have been infected by the revolutionary mood. There's a great majority of them who refuse to fire on workers, especially if the leaders, the left leaders, made a clear call to the soldiers. Another indication of that of the situation is that at the end of May, the police unions and the police is in general and in France was more reactionary than the army, expressed his full sympathy for the workers and protested against the government, explaining that they didn't want to be used against the students and workers. So that's an indication, I think, quite clear, of the decomposition of the state, bourgeois state. But no initiative was taken from the leadership, workers' leaders. And on the 13th of May, De Gaulle appeared on television. He announced general elections for the end of June and also called for reactionary committees to be set up. Reactionary committees, and to defend the system against Stalinist threats. On the same day, there was a big demonstration of supporters of De Gaulle. Was organized in Paris and other cities. But if you look at these demonstrations, they were quite sizable. They had been organized for weeks with the buses and all the means of the upper layers. But it was nothing else but the dust of society. Reactionary students, old reactionary pensioners, all types of upper middle-class citizens, Myers, and really the dust of society. It could have been swept away by a decisive action of the class to take power. However, this action was never taken by the troops. And the reaction started slowly to regain control. As we often explain in revolution, the mood can shift very quickly from the right to the left, or left to the right. The Communist Party leaders, they eagerly supported the perspective of general elections. In other words, they agreed to derail the movement into parliamentary road. And at the beginning of June, they started to say that the workers should try to reach the best deals, the best possibilities in each factory. And when it was the case, they had to end the strike and go back to work. And in the absence of any perspective, other perspective, in one factory after another, all along the June month, the strike stopped. And the June saw also the beginning of victimization from the state, which lasted several months. The police force was sent to factories to break strikes and occupation. 4 people died in June. Hundreds of immigrant workers and students were expelled of the country. In the workplaces, the most active workers were targeted. For example, in Citroën, car factories, Citroën, 925 workers were sacked. Also, more than 100 journalists were sacked, fired from the state agency. And police start to control the IDs of the students in the, at the entrance of universities. And it is still the case today in La Sorbonne. If you're not a student of La Sorbonne, you have to pretend to be an American tourist to enter the building. Otherwise, you won't enter. So the general elections at the end of June saw a massive victory for the right wing. As I said, the middle class in particular, they shifted to the right quickly on the electoral plane. The Communist Party lost 39 seats, the Socialists 61 seats, and when you look at the campaign made by the Stalinists, it sounds crazy. They were campaigning just as the right-wing party for law and order. The main posters was saying, against these orders, against these orders, say the Communist Party posters for the campaigning in the election. Against these orders, against anarchy, vote communist. Well, the people voted for the original instead of the communist copy. Because the original was the De Gaulle. Very cynically, De Gaulle said that these elections were the elections of the fear. But the communists contributed to this fear by such crazy slogans. Even some strikers must have votes for the right-wing party. Because you had 10 million strikers during May. And in the elections, only 9 million votes for the left in Sorsum. The Stalinists blamed the ultra-left for these results. They said it was the barricades' fault, etc. And they consoled themselves by chanting the conquest of the strike. Chanting, praising. But most of these conquests were soon to be liquidated. The inflation soon destroyed the wage increases, the increases in pensions, and the promise of a national deal on the shortening of the working week was abandoned, was forgotten. De Gaulle nevertheless had to step down in 1969 after defeated the referendum. But the right-wing regime managed to stabilize itself for some years. The economy was still growing. The crisis, economic crisis, only hit France in 1973. And this, together with the role of the Stalinist leaders and reformist leaders, prevented the resurgence of the revolution. But May 1968 nonetheless had long-term consequences. The Stalinist leaders were discredited among a lot of workers, especially among the vanguard, and there was a blow for the Stalinist authority. It gave a new impulse to the socialist parties and the trade union, the socialist trade union, who grew very quickly in the 70s and turned left, because the socialist leaders reflected more than the communists the mood of the population. The victory of the Socialist Party in the 1981 elections was a long-term political consequence of May 68. But last but not least, May 68 has reaffirmed the revolutionary tradition of the French working class. A tradition that is not lost, it is still alive in the French working class. It is still a nightmare for the French bourgeoisie. But for us, it represents the future. A new May 68 is being prepared in France and all over Europe. And this time, the criminal grip of the Stalinist leaders has disappeared. And the authority of the reformist leaders is at the lower level. So this opens a big possibilities to build the organization, so that when a new 68 occurs, we will turn it into a victory.
Comrades, we still have 15 minutes before the break.